with his claims at all, and they never even agreed to take any of his cases. So
we have 10 seconds, John.
I would just say that we have to see what the Supreme Court will do, but they ought to follow the mandate of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment and the Constitution.
We have to leave it there. John Boniface, president of Free Speech for People. And that does it for our show. A huge congratulations to our producer, John Hamilton, and his wonderful wife, Yara, on the birth of their son this morning, William Dernay Hamilton. And congratulations to Jasmine, his sister, as well. On Monday, New Year's Day, we'll bring you a special on Julian Assange, the imprisoned WikiLeaks founder of the High Court of Justice in London. We'll hear what may be Assange's final appeal soon. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, my name is Jeff, and I host a show entitled A Matter of Public Records that is broadcast on KBOO the second and fourth Saturdays of every month from 3 to 6 a.m. It is a somewhat eclectic show where the song choices are often instinctual, based on the prior song. Tune in and you might hear some instrumentals, some slightly avant-garde music, punk, post-punk, indie rock, jazz. To my ears, it is a classic late-night radio show. That's A Matter of Public Records, every second and fourth Saturday from 3 to 6 a.m. on KBOO 90.7 FM.
Support for the KBOO Evening News comes from KBOO members and Lori Sonnenfeld Realty, helping people buy or sell a home or duplex in the greater Portland area for the past 35 years. More information at CascadiaHomes.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. This is a special edition of the KBOO Evening News, the best of 2023. I'm Althea Billings, news director here at KBOO, and I have a head cold. From December 25th through January 1st, we'll be taking a look back at some of our best stories from the past year. Before we dig in, it is KBOO's end of year campaign, and now is a great time to support the radio station that you know and love. Every weekday, the news team is bringing you local, volunteer-produced news to inform your life. If you've enjoyed it this year, consider donating to KBOO if you're able. You can go online to kboo.fm/give or text the word KBOO to 44321. On today's show, we're focusing on local and regional climate issues. Up first, my coverage of a protest in Lincoln County against pesticide spraying over the Seal Rock Water District. On Thursday, August 31st, the Seal Rock Water District in Lincoln County held a meeting for community members to ask questions about how their water supply might be impacted by aerial pesticide spraying. At the beginning of August, residents in the Beaver Creek watershed got a notification that a nearby property owner would be spraying pesticides on their land via helicopter between September 2nd and November 30th. This raised a great deal of alarm, since the spray would likely end up in the water supply for some 5,500 residents, and the spray can drift up to 2 miles depending on the wind conditions. Residents of the water district have been organizing for a month to try to stop the aerial pesticide application. The chemicals that the landowner plans to spray include glyphosate, which increases the risk of non-Hodgkin lymphoma by 41% if you're exposed to it. At the meeting on Thursday, residents expressed their worry for themselves, their families, and the wildlife that surrounds them on the coast if they're exposed to these chemicals. Seal Rock Water District General Manager Adam Denlinger described the work that his office had been doing in the past weeks. He described meeting with county commissioners and State Representative Gomberg. He described reaching out to state agencies like the Oregon Department of Forestry, of Environmental Quality, of Agriculture, and the Oregon Health Authority. The district spoke with the governor's office as well. But none of these agencies or authorities have the power to stop the spray, even though it's all but guaranteed to get into the water supply of over 5,000 people. That's because the state has a preemption law when it comes to pesticide regulation. Only state-level legislation can change the regulation of how pesticides are used, and critics say that Oregon regulations are not strong enough to protect people. That's why a 2017 ballot measure in Lincoln County to ban aerial pesticide spray was actually overturned by county and appeals courts in 2019. Denlinger says the water district plans to test and sample the water to see if it's been contaminated with pesticides. At an earlier meeting, he said the district could divert its water supply to instead pull from the Siletz River as an option, but community members pointed out that the Siletz River is scheduled to be aerially sprayed around the same time. There's also a second pesticide notification from the landowner who lives internationally. This one is for backpack spraying, same chemicals but done by hand. That type of permit means they don't have to tell anyone, including the state, when they will actually be spraying the area. The water district, local representatives, and residents have tried to reach the landowner to persuade him to change his mind about spraying, but they haven't made much progress so far. Drifting spray, water contamination, or making people and animals sick could be a violation of the law, but a lawsuit could only proceed after the impacts have been felt by the community. For KBOO News, I'm Althea Billings. Over Saturday and Sunday, concerned residents of the Seal Rock Water District line Highway 101 south of Newport on the Oregon coast. They're holding signs that say, "Stop the spray, my water, my choice," waving at cars. It's their third weekend out here. In August, residents became aware of plans of a private landowner to aerially spray pesticides, which threatens the Beaver Creek watershed with potential drift and runoff. That's not good for local wildlife, but Beaver Creek is also the water source for 5,500 households in the area. Tyann Rios is one of the residents of the water district who was demonstrating on Highway 101 on Sunday.
We are protesting today because there is one landowner who lives in Denmark, owns 473 acres worth of land at the top of Beaver Creek mountain, and when he sprays, he has filed a report, I guess you would say, with the Department of Forestry that he is going to spray herbicides on the top of the mountain. When he does that, the drift, as you can feel now, the breeze in the air, the drift will go down into our water supply for Seal Rock Water District, where 5,500 homes, that's not the total people, that's just the homes, the residents, will be receiving tainted water from our water supply. So Beaver Creek watershed is where the water all comes down to. So if you look high up on the mountains, there's little baby streams that are up there that are really not protected because there's no fish in them. And so because they're not protected, they could be sprayed. Whether you're talking aerial spray or ground spraying, it doesn't matter. They could still be sprayed. If you follow those little creeks down, they quickly become creeks that hold salmon, hold fish, and that those creeks lead right into the watershed for Beaver Creek, and that's where Seal Rock Water District gets our water.
The chemicals that the landowner plans to spray include glyphosate, which increases the risk of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma by 41%. Through August, Water District users put pressure on Lincoln County Commissioners, the Water District, and local representatives to take action. Seal Rock Water District Manager Adam Denlinger described the work his office had been doing at a meeting on Thursday, August 31st.
On August 17th, the district received an email from the governor's office, which included information which you can read on the staff report, providing the district that the governor's office or DEQ in this case or other state agencies do not have the authority to step in and stop the aerial application or the application of herbicides as long as they are done so within the conditions of the Oregon Forest Practice Act. On August 21st, the district hosted a meeting at the request of a small number of Seal Rock Water District customers to exchange information and discuss the potential of taking legal action to prevent the aerial application of herbicides under the Safe Drinking Water Act. The district's legal counsel did look into information that was provided to the district relative to the Safe Drinking Water Act, and we have been trying to reach out to the EPA with regard to the district's opportunities under under the use of the EPA. Right now, unless there is a violation to the Forest Practice Act, or the district is injured by the application of herbicides in some way, or the state is not actively supporting the district, the EPA will not step in and try to affect any change or provide support in this for the district at this point.
Despite the outreach, the Oregon Departments of Forestry, Environmental Quality, Agriculture, and the Oregon Health Authority don't have the power to stop the spray, even though it's all but guaranteed to get into the water supply for over 5,000 people. That's because the state has a preemption law when it comes to pesticide regulation. Only state-level legislation can change the regulation of how pesticides are used, and critics say that Oregon regulations are not strong enough to protect people. Even though Lincoln County residents passed a ballot measure to ban aerially sprayed pesticides in 2017, it was overturned by county and appeals courts in 2019. Even that fact wasn't well known by residents, Rios says.
So until August 8th, everybody around here thought that there was no spraying in Lincoln County. So we run into tons and tons of people that we say, hey, join us. They're like, what do you mean? It's already illegal in Lincoln County. Like, nobody wants it here. We passed an initiative for that. And for them to find out that, oh, nope, the fight is still on. We still have to, like, do some things and get some things in place in order to stop the spraying. It's really shocking to people.
The pesticides and herbicides the landowner intends to use are legal under state law, which pulls its recommendations from the EPA. John French was another protester on the highway on Sunday.
You know, I'd like to see other options besides pesticides being used in our forests. I know that it's legal, but right now, but I think that has to change. As I told someone recently, as a cigarette smoker, former cigarette smoker of 20 years, I know there's a big difference between legal and safe. And although what's going on now may be legal, it certainly isn't safe. And that needs to change. And unfortunately, that's going to be a really uphill battle.
Water District Manager Denlinger has proposed diverting the potentially contaminated water supply to instead pull from the Siletz River. But community members have pointed out there's an issue with that plan, too.
So if we go to the secondary water source, that happens to be Newport, and they get their water from Siletz, it's also due to be sprayed this month. And because it's backpack spraying, there's no notification as to when that's going to be done. So when they divert the water, it's going to be to tainted water. So either way you look at it, everybody here is going to be getting water that has pesticides in it that's been known to cause cancer.
Our water system is just, you know, less than a year old. A new multi-million dollar water system that was installed because it was supposed to be more secure than the previous water system, and now we may have to shut it down.
There's some sort of an acknowledgement on behalf of, you know, the water district, the county commissioner, that this may very well happen. The water district says that they don't intend to give tainted water, but nevertheless, I don't know what the option is. I really don't. So then I've been searching for resources to tell us what do we do with this water that's coming into our houses. For example, okay, we're not supposed to drink it, but can you cook with it? So I've been told, no, do not cook with it, because when you heat the water, then the chemicals in the water change, and then they're in the air in your house. So it's not, do not cook with it. And then of course we have pets and people have livestock. I have 14 chickens. I don't know, like, I have no answers right now.
This moment has brought an awareness to local residents that they may not have had before. For one thing, a landowner who wants to spray doesn't have to proactively reach out to people whose water sources might be impacted. They have to opt in to be notified.
I'm thinking, oh, you know, our water district, they're looking out for us. They're looking out for our safety. I don't have to, you know, be concerned or anything because, you know, I was here when they moved the intake to Beaver Creek just last year. I'm thinking, oh, great, fresh water. And the water tastes great. I just want you to know. It just really tastes great. And so I just really, it didn't really occur to me that all of these steps had to be taken place in order for us to be safe. The onus is on us as people who live here, who reside here, not the people that are spraying. That just, it just seems a little backwards to me, that's all.
Demonstrators clarify that they aren't against logging or the timber industry itself.
We really do not want our water tainted. It has nothing to do with forestry. Manage the forest, manage it wisely, but please don't put poison in our water.
Well, I'd like everybody to know that the people here who are concerned about their water supply are not anti-wood, my house is made of wood, we're not anti-forest, or against the people that own forest land. We're just for pure, clean, fresh water, you know, which seems like a pretty natural human desire. So that's kind of why we're here.
But they do envision a system where concern for health and the environment are weighted more heavily.
All bodies of water should be protected because they all lead to a water source for some community somewhere.
The window for the aerial pesticide spraying lasts through November 2nd, and another permit for backpack pesticide spraying will go into effect for the rest of the year after the comment period that ends on September 13th. The Water District, local representatives, and residents have tried to reach the landowner, who lives internationally, to persuade him to change his mind about spraying, but they haven't made much progress so far. Drifting spray, water contamination, or making people sick could be a violation of the law if it comes from this pesticide spraying, but a lawsuit could only proceed after the impacts have been felt by the community. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings. You are tuned in to a special edition of the KBOO Evening News, the best of 2023. If you've enjoyed the KBOO Evening News this year, consider supporting us with a donation. It's very easy to do, and every dollar counts. You can go online to kboo.fm/give or text the word KBOO to 44321. Back to the best of 2023. Up next is a story from KBOO reporter Paul Kim on the Blue Mountain Biodiversity Project.
You're listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Paul Kim. I'm here with Paula Hood from Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project. Welcome to the show, Paula. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. I'm really excited to hear more about the type of work you all do there.
Yeah, so the organization I work for, Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project, we're a really small grassroots nonprofit, and we work to protect and restore the natural ecosystems of the Blue Mountains and Eastern Oregon Cascades. And our organization has been active in the region since 1991, and we work on federal public lands in Eastern Oregon and Southeastern Washington. We challenge logging projects, livestock grazing, toxic herbicide use, and other projects that harm ecosystem integrity. We focus on protecting mature and old forests, high-quality wildlife habitats, streams and water quality, and forest habitats that are integral to ecosystem integrity and processes, and field surveying is the heart of the work that we do. And so we field survey timber sales in our work area every summer, and we're in the field with volunteers from the beginning of June through the end of September every year. And we use this information that we collect on the ground to inform our public comments and objections to timber sales and to pressure the agency to stop or beneficially modify any sort of logging project.
So, you know, I don't have an environmental science background. I don't have a lot of experience working in climate justice and environmentalism. So could you explain for people like me, what does field surveying entail exactly?
For field surveying, we train volunteers in a variety of different skills and in the field. And so that includes map and compass skills. It includes identifying old growth conditions. It includes identifying areas that have been heavily impacted by past logging, as well as things like the degree of slope, road density, things like that. And so this information is important because we use it both to prioritize areas that And we also train people in wildlife and plant identification, particularly for key species that are important to our work and that help to identify certain forest types. And so we take all of this information and we train people how to fill out survey sheets that we create specifically. And so that goes into helping inform areas that we prioritize for protection and negotiations with the Forest Service to ask them to, for example, drop or modify specific areas that they are planning to log. And so it helps us protect forests in the areas that we have field surveyed.
So you were getting into this a little bit before and talking about why biodiversity, why this is so essential. I'm wondering, is there a single biggest takeaway or issue that the common person who's not doing this kind of work out in the wildlife like yourself needs to understand to really grasp what's going on, right? Because when we talk about the environment, I think for me, I can get really lost in the weeds sometimes because it's such a big topic in so many different details of environmental climate justice work that's being done. So yeah, I'm wondering if there is something that you have noticed in your work that is the most pressing thing that you're noticing or biggest takeaway for folks.
I can break down just sort of quickly a few more bullet points that I think are important to think about for forests, particularly in terms of, in a sense, the huge collateral damage being done to forests by wide-scale logging, mostly in the name of fear of fire across the region. And so, just to kind of throw out a few of those ideas, logging is bad for biodiversity and for the climate, and logging is the largest source of carbon emissions in Oregon, and that was according to a 2018 OSU study, which confirmed previous research that had been done by the Center for Sustainable Economy. Logging in the east side often targets large trees and mature and old forests. And unfortunately, large trees remain at a deficit on the landscape due to over a century of ecologically inappropriate management and overlogging. And that is, particularly dire because large trees are crucially important for wildlife habitat and biodiversity, carbon storage, and stream habitats in the region. And, yet they are still being increasingly targeted by the Forest Service for logging. And just to highlight that, a study came out in 2021 that was led by Dr. David Muldrexler that shows that large trees comprise just 3% of the trees in forests east of the Cascade Crest in eastern Oregon and southeastern Washington, yet they store approximately 42% of the carbon in these forests. Large trees need to be preserved on the landscape, not logged. And then logging degrades or destroys important forest and stream habitats for wildlife and fish, and that includes species such as marten, lynx, wolverine, elk and deer, salmon, and many more. Many species depend on mature and old forests, including mixed conifer forests, and so those species are particularly at risk as the agency continues to target those forests for logging. And also, I would be remiss not to note that roads are a huge issue on national forests and can be very damaging, particularly when there's a high density of roads. And you can't have timber sales without roads. You have to have a very extensive road infrastructure for all of those timber sales that are currently being proposed and carried out. And so there are lots and lots and lots of roads on national forests in eastern Oregon. And, I really want readers to sit with some of this idea. Like, for example, both the Malheur and the Wallal-Whitman National Forest each contain over 9,000 miles of existing inventory roads. And that's the Forest Service's own data. And so it's just a huge volume of roads, and it creates fragmentation, it damages water quality. Those forests currently have road densities that are at levels that are recognized as threats to water quality, fish, and watershed health, and they exceed the Forest Service's own standards in at least many areas. And then also those road crossings across streams, culverts often fail and create barriers to fish passage, and they block many hundreds of miles of habitat for salmon and other imperiled fish. And so, you know, of course, we're concurrently spending millions of dollars trying to ensure that salmon and other imperiled fish don't go extinct, yet we're not taking care of some of their important habitat, even something as simple as dealing with, you know, blocked passages, blocked culverts and road crossings that are creating passages that are blocking passage to hundreds of miles of their habitat. Also, there's extensive cumulative impacts with issues such as widespread livestock grazing on the national forests in eastern Oregon. And livestock grazing can be hugely damaging to fish, streams, and water quality. And then I also want to leave folks with the idea, with the thought that, you know, researchers have found that less than 1% of thinned areas actually encounter wildfire each year. So, you know, that forests are vast and huge, and that they are being thinned in the name of fear of fire, you know, that supposed thinning treatment is only good for approximately somewhere between a 10 and 20 year window. And so the idea that a thinned area will have a wildfire pass through it, encounter it, in the window of time that is supposedly effective is very small. You know, a couple of other just takeaway messages I think are important are that we're at a critical juncture in the fight against climate change and loss of biodiversity, and we desperately need to protect biodiversity, clean water, and the climate, and instead we're losing too much of the remaining last best habitat in our region to logging, and that is exacerbating the climate and biodiversity crises.
Thanks, Paula. That seems like a really complicated and massive undertaking that you all are doing there at Blue Mountains Biodiversity. Besides pursuing litigation or legal action, is there any other ways of holding folks accountable when that kind of discrepancy or misleading information is being put out there?
I think having public outcry about it is very, very important. And so, you know, I think one thing that people can do is visit our website and sign up for our action alerts and volunteer with our organization, because, you know, we're engaged with the Forest Service, and we also try to provide a platform for people to engage with the Forest Service, the general public, to understand better how to give feedback and engage with the Forest Service on these issues. And so hopefully with enough raised voices and public outcry, you know, one, the public understands these issues better, and then also the Forest Service hopefully starts to change some of their actions as they get more pressure from the public.
Well, thank you again for chatting with me today. And thank you, Paula. Have a good rest of your day.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to KBOO News in Depth. That was Paula Hood from the Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project. For KBOO News, I'm Paul Kim.
You've been listening to a special edition of the KBOO Evening News, the best of 2023. We've been taking a look back at some of our best climate justice stories from our volunteer reporters in the past year. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we can't do it without your help. Consider donating to KBOO during the last week of our end-of-year campaign. KBOO.fm/give is the website to donate, but you can also text the word KBOO to 44321. A big thank you to all of the volunteer reporters who have contributed to the newscast this past year. Thank you to all of the KBOO members and donors who've supported us this year, and thank you for listening. For KBOO News, I'm Althea Billings. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
KBOO's annual end-of-the-year campaign is just getting started. And now is a great time to become a member of KBOO. Go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321 right now. Your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $20,000 thanks to the generous support of a group of anonymous donors. Join the KBOO family today and help us meet our 75,000 end of the year goal.
Welcome to the Best of Counterspin for 2023. I'm Janine Jackson. Every week, Counterspin tries to bring you a look behind the headlines of the mainstream news. Not because headlines are false, necessarily, but because the full story is rarely reflected there. The voices, the communities, the ideas that are not front and center in the discourse of the powerful, but could help us move toward a more equitable, peaceful, healthy communal life. Most conversations we need to have to happen around corporate news media, while deconstructing and reimagining the discourse that they're pumping out day after day. Counterspin is thankful to all of the activists, researchers, reporters, and advocates who appear on the show. They all help us see the world and one another more clearly, give us tools to make a better future, and offer other resources once we understand that we can't believe everything we read. You're listening to the Best of Counterspin for 2023, brought to you by the Media Watch Group FAIR. Just about a year ago, lots of people